Hello, friends. Welcome or welcome back to a short erotic sex story written and told by Lala's Bedtime Tales. So let's have a quick chat before jumping into this week's very sexy episode. I am hosting a giveaway on my Instagram account Tuesday, March 14th to celebrate Steak and a Blowjob Day. So, if you provide the steak to celebrate, I'll provide you with the goodies to blow the dick owner you'll be sucking away. You'll need to enter the giveaway by following me on Instagram and liking the post. The giveaway entrance will start March 14th, so be sure to check my Instagram page. The lucky winner will receive a vibrating cock ring, flavored oral gel, and a sex toy cleaner. I like to call this the Pro Blow Kit that will take your head game to the next level. So, follow me now on Instagram at Lala's Bedtime Tales. You can find the info in the show notes of this episode. As always, I ask that you please show me your fave erotic storytelling podcaster and erotic writer some love by giving this podcast a 5-star rating and review. It's crucial that you review the podcast because, as an erotic writer and storyteller, I am always interested in feedback and knowing your thoughts on the stories I share with you all. Do you want to help support this amazing erotic storytelling podcast? Do you love, 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 love Lala's Bedtime Tales, but want more content? Especially exclusive content? Then join Lala's Bedtime Tales exclusive Patreon community. We have so much fun. Starting at $2.50, if you join the Just a Tip tier, you'll get a shout out on social media and help me keep bringing you all this high quality podcast. But remember, there's levels to this shit. I have varying tiers that offer something for all of my favorite people. If you want early access and ad-free podcast episodes, behind the scenes of my writing process, a shout out on the podcast, voting rights of what stories deserve a continuation, video tellings of your fave stories, or a first look at my new work, and that's just a few of the perks I'm offering. There are so many more. So, if you want more of Lala, you enjoy smutty, erotic content and all things sexy, then check out the show notes to join my Patreon community. Also, if you're a female or woman-identifying individual that loves my erotic stories but would love sex advice, dating tips, and sexual health info, then be sure to join Lala's Sexual Liberators Facebook group. You can find the information in the episode's show notes. Lastly, be sure to subscribe to my podcast so you'll be alerted whenever there's a new sexy audio erotic tale for your listening pleasure. Keep listening because March's story is coming in so hot that you'll be dripping wet or oh so hard by the end of this episode. Enjoy! It's time for Lala's Bedtime Tales. Grab your wine, dim the lights, and get ready to listen to an oh-so-sexy bedtime story. I'm Lala, and I want to tell you an erotic story guaranteed to turn you on and get you hot and bothered. So, listen up. Trigger warning. Repeat. Trigger warning. I am dropping in to let you all know that your mental health is essential to me, and I am all for protecting your peace at all costs. Therefore, the latest episode is a sexy, dark, bully romance that deals with some of the following elements. Intimate partner violence, DUBCON or dubious consent, references to child abuse, suicide ideation, and references to suicidal death. So, viewer discretion is advised. Hi there, besties. Raise your hand if you are a ride or die. If you raised your hand, have you ever stepped back to examine what that really means to you? I'm sure some people hear that expression and either say, hell yeah, or a fuck no. Well, this week's main character, Bevan Walsh, is undoubtedly a ride or die. But the real question is if she's a ride or die for the right person, and if so, at what cost? So listen up to find out where being a ride or die has gotten Bevan in this dark, harsh mafia world. I silently stare at the orange pianist painting across the foyer from my seat on the bottom step of the winding staircase. The same spot I parked my ass when my raging father told me not to move said ass from if I wanted to live to see another day. In his mind, it was a threat, but in my mind, it sounded like a sweet escape from the tumultuous mafia life we live. I stare at the orange pianist until the rustic, burnt, neon orange hues swirl together, causing me to have double vision and see black spots. I try my damnedest to silence the ringing in my ears from where my father slammed his palm so hard against my left cheek, I swear he slightly deafened me in my left ear. I bit my tongue so hard, I couldn't tell if the coppery flavor of pennies that filled my mouth were from the impact of his heavy palm or my determination to not let him see my pain. My cheek still throbbed from his assault. I still feel the stinging pain, knowing my cheek would be decorated with varying shades of sangria and mulberry purples as a hideous bruise blooms on my ivory skin. I wasn't a stranger to my father's temper, which led to my mother and me being left black and blue most days. I envied my brother for having the strength to put the fear of God in our father by the time he was of age to dole out the same amount of violence. But nothing was worse than the venomous gaze Cyan Walsh, my childhood best friend, cast in my way as he readied himself for the far worse punishment he received for my betrayal. I tried to ignore the sounds of furniture breaking, heavy grunts of pain, and fists hitting flesh as our fathers punished him for our transgressions. Cyan, my salvation, the other half of my soul, and I knew he wouldn't be angry at me forever. He'd understand why I did what I did. I had no choice. They backed me into a corner. I could deal with some anger, humiliation, and temporary physical pain if it kept me from marrying a man older than my father in the next few years. Cyan would have to understand. I did what I did as an act of self-preservation. I had only been 18 for a few months and freshly graduated from high school. And Cyan's father, the Irish mafia's boss, had condemned me to a future of a life as the third or fourth wife of the Polish mafia leader. I didn't want to marry someone over 40 years older than me. I didn't give a fuck if he wouldn't claim me the Irish Mafia's golden beauty until I was 21. I had to fucking save myself. When I shared the news with Cyan, he joked about the matter, saying crush up sleeping pills in his dinner at night and that I'd probably be a widow by 25 or 30. Cyan told me to look on the bright side of the situation. The bright side? What the fuck? There was no bright side. Even if I'd be the beautiful arm candy of a rich man that could afford my shopping habit and beauty addiction, I didn't want to be married to an old, perverse, paunchy man whose wives conveniently went missing when he tired of them. Cyan's response to the situation had stunned and infuriated me. He was my bestest friend, and I'd loved him since I made him eat sand in kindergarten. He was my first kiss. We explored each other's bodies, losing our virginities to one another only a few years ago. So, he'd understand my actions. Cyan and I, souls, were tethered together. We were meant to have an undying love, an infallible connection, like what you'd read in any Nicholas Sparks novel. Me and Cyan were relationship goals. We were fucking endgame. So, I did what I had to do to make sure I wouldn't be taken from the other half of my heart. I recorded us having sex unbeknownst to him, which I know was a violation, I know, but I had no other way to save myself or give our love a fighting chance. Plus, the deed was done after I clicked the upload button and published our amateur homemade porno video to every free adult film site imaginable. The Polish mafia leader, no matter how coveted I am for my beauty, would want a used bride. My virginity was the golden ticket to an alliance between the two syndicates. In the eyes of any made man, I was ruined and of no value without my quote-unquote virtue, which was total Stone Age bullshit, if you ask me. My parents were mortified. My father blaming my mother for failing to raise and properly train me from an obedient mafia princess to a well-mannered, meek mafia wife, like I'm some fucking lapdog breed. After berating my mother, my father dragged me out the house, vowing to kill Cyan for taking liberties that weren't his. Like my father had the sole right to sell my body to the highest bidder. As if my body wasn't my own. My father treated me like I'd committed the world's worst mortal sin of having the gall to give my body to who I see fit. But I had destroyed the Polish alliance with the Irish mob. And, you know, I didn't give two shits. Even if I felt chills in my bone marrow when I became unknowingly privy to Alistair, the heir to the Irish mob throne and Cyan's oldest brother, say callously to Blaine, the Irish Mafia's second son, that it was Cyan's slutty best friend's fault that the Polish Brastu now shunned the Irish because of their whorish women. I jump out of my skin as the heavy door to Cyan's father's office slams against the wall, pulling me out of my introspection of my past actions. The vibrations of the heavy door causes the orange pianist painting to shake against the wall, causing goosebumps to cover my skin. My eyes widen when they land on Cyan's bloody face. His beauty, marred by bruises, swelling, gashes, and a broken cheekbone. He limps my way, dragging his big, battered body, his left arm hanging limply as if his shoulder has been dislocated. His brother Blaine hot on his heels. Zion kicks his way through my suitcase as my father had me pack as he delivered me to the Walsh's house, telling me, regardless of the outcome of his meeting with the Irish mob boss, I was dead to him and the Walsh's family's problem. A monster looms over me that has never graced my presence. His reddish brown hair slick with sweat and blood, his breathing labored, and his teeth gnashing at me like a rabid attack dog. Gone is my beautiful, lively, goofy best friend with the mesmerizing aquamarine eyes. His one good eye is bloodshot from the busted capillaries, leaving them a dark, dull, depthless, stormy blue. I feel tears burning the back of my eyelids, but none roll down my face because I had no more tears to cry over this situation. How fucking could you? You of all people know how my father feels about me. I'm the fucking middle son of one of the worst mafia leaders known to man. I spent my fucking life as his scapegoat, waiting with bated breath for the evil man to snuff me the fuck out. If it weren't for Alistair's intervention, I'd have left that room on a stretcher, if not a fucking body bag, for our cleaners to make me disappear. I trusted you, and you do this to us? Zion loudly whispers, inches from my face, spittle flying from his mouth as he wraps his one good hand around my throat, squeezing it until I feel my head start to swim. I gasp for air, clawing at his fingers on instinct, trying to drag in much needed air. Blaine rips his hand from my throat, allowing me to breathe in a few raspy breaths. I grasp my throat, shocked by Sion's actions for the first time seeing the made man in him that he masks so well. I guess his father's worries were misplaced. Zion was just as malicious as any made man. A soft man wouldn't have almost choked me to death. But a weak man would place his hands on a woman. So maybe there was some truth to his father's emasculation of him. Who really knows anyone? At this moment, I was realizing I clearly didn't know Zion. I make eye contact with him as Blaine separates us to try to keep Zion from murdering me. At first, Bev, you were a great ego booster. My brother is joking about you following me around all these years like a lovesick puppy. I would defend you because we're best friends, right? But really, it was just sad, pathetic desperation to find love in a man because your father couldn't love someone like you. A defective, cold-hearted bitch that won't thrive in a world like ours. That's why he was so ready to throw you to the Polish mafia. He'd look honorable amongst our top men and he'd get rid of a child that was nothing but a failed abortion. Zion bites out every syllable of every word, feeling like a torturous stab in the back. Not deep enough to kill, but enough to draw blood, leaving me feeling painfully raw. Zai, you don't mean those words. I had no choice but to. I defend myself. My voice sounds raspy and unfamiliar from the aftermath of almost being strangled to death. No. Save your shit, Bevan Ryan. I don't want to hear it. I guess this is why they say men and women can't be friends. You've definitely proven that correct, Bevan. So, since you're not my friend, I don't give a fuck about your feelings anymore. You threw me to the wolves, so fuck you and fuck your feelings. I have a confession. Best friend, you weren't the only one, Zion snidely declares. My mind swims. I'm not the only one. I try to rack my brain for the meaning of the statement as Blaine tries to convince him to stop while he's ahead. But Cyan, being one hell of an enemy, goes in for the kill. He gives me a bloody, devilish grin, angrily announcing to the little audience of his brothers that have gathered, "You weren't my only fuck buddy. Not even just over the years. Even now, I've been fucking other bitches outside of you. You aren't special. You're just any other hole for my usage. I tell you and every other girl the same nice, pleasant lies because it's a guaranteed one-way ticket into every mafia princess with daddy issues panties. But I guess you got your wish. Let's just hope we don't kill each other, Mrs. Cyan Walsh. I was told to come out here and inform you that we're getting married as soon as possible. Cheers!" My stomach sours as bile burns my throat, my mind trying to process hurtful bomb after bomb Cyan just dropped on me like a Call of Duty bombing run. It seems like my best friend is as talented at destroying who he sees as opponent in the real world as he is as a gamer. I watch him slowly begin to limp away, freeze, then turn around heading back toward me. Like a foolish glutton for punishment, I hope he's coming back to tell me he's just being an angry asshole. We'd fought many times before, and it wasn't out of the ordinary for Cyan to wield his tongue like an accomplished swordsman. But he'd never, ever been this cruel. "Oh, I totally forgot to tell you something, fiance." Cyan sneers, invading my space, causing Blaine to tense, placing his hand on his chest to keep just enough distance between us so he won't feel obligated to save me from another choking. I meet Cyan's cold stare, feeling unease creep up my spine as I wait for him to continue. He closes his one good eye for a second, and when he opens that eye, the stilly gaze is colder than I'd ever seen. "You're a fucking snake, and this is your one and final warning. If you pull another stunt like this again, Bevan, soon to be Walsh, you will be dead to me as well." Cyan warns and seals the threat by hawking a bloody loogie into my face with what little strength he has left in him. My world tilts on its axis as his bloody saliva slowly slides down my forehead to my chin. I make the grave mistake of making eye contact with Blaine, who looks at me with pity, making me feel small and humiliated. Blaine, Alistair, and Lachlan follow Cyan to get patched up, leaving me to stew in my own self-misery. I want to stand up. I want to hide. And more than anything, I want the floor to fucking swallow me. But my muscles are frozen in place from the shock I've experienced. I wasn't going to be forced to marry my best friend, but the monster of a made man he'd never shown me until today. I'd be at the mercy of yet another callous man if I couldn't make things right between me and Cyan. White paper towels wipe at my face, causing me to flinch, breaking me out of my daze. I peer into the face of one of the Walsh terror twins. Big, angry, jade green eyes look at me with sympathy. I take the paper towels from his hand, cleaning the last residual of shame from my face. Devlin is a gangly 12-year-old on the cusp of puberty. typically shy around me because of a secret crush he harbors. I'm not supposed to know about it, but it's blatantly obvious. He sits down beside me on the last step of the stairs, providing me solace in the silence. I stare ahead at the orange pianist, willing myself to fish for confirmation. Is what Sai said true? About the other girls? I take a few deep breaths, trying to calm my heart before chancing a glance at the solemn preteen seated beside me. Devlin looks anywhere but in my eyes, providing me with the depressing confirmation that I was an idiot to give my heart, my body, my soul, and my trust to a made man. Devlin gives me a shrug and states, I can't say whether I believed him when he said you aren't special. You're practically family to us, Bevan. But we all know made men sleep with lots and lots of women until they're married. And I cut him off, finishing his sentence. Some even after, like my father. I feel hot tears escaping my eyes, quickly brushing them away before Devlin notices. Because I don't want anyone to see my pain. I drop my head, staring at the marble flooring, still trying to process everything that happened. Not even just from today, but from the time my parents broke the news of my betrothal to being spat on by the closest person in the world to me. Devlin gently pinches my quivering chin between his fingers, turning my face to meet his earnest stare. I can't help but give him a small smile as I watch him blush profusely as his eyes shone with adoration for my beauty. Then he softly compliments, Bevan Ryan, for as long as I can remember, you've been the most beautiful girl in the world to me. Well, that's a lie. Not only me, but to many admirers. But you're also absolutely radiant because your amazing personality shines like a beacon of light in our dark world. That's why you're the golden beauty. Fuck Sai. He's an idiot. If you were my soon-to-be wife, I'd never feel the need to look anywhere but in front of me. To feel like I won the jackpot when it came to the woman of my dream. I burst into tears, laughing and crying from the youngest Walsh boy's words. My heart bleeding, knowing that this sweet boy would be hardened when he got initiated into a made man, losing all his humanity, like my best friend and his older brothers. I peck Devlin on the cheek, giggling when they become rosier, and I say, Devlin, made man or not, whatever girl steals your heart will be the luckiest woman alive, and you will make that girl extremely happy someday. Regardless of what you're told, being loving and kind to a woman that gives you her heart isn't weakness, it's strength. Who knew the hope blooming in my chest would be due to Cyan's 12-year-old kid brother instead of Cyan, the man who always claimed, no matter what ensued, he'd have my back. I wanted Cyan to be my white knight. I'd hoped and wished for, but apparently, he didn't want that position in my life. At this moment, I needed a white knight. But if it weren't Cyan, then I guess he'd never come to my rescue. 11 years later. I hate weddings. And over the years, I've had to attend countless. Being married to an Irish mafia underboss and one of the sons of the ruling family. Mafia weddings were these expensive, elaborate events masquerading as celebrations, not of love, but of organized crime group alliances, are men being rewarded with pussy for life for their services to the mob. These weddings made my blood boil and my stomach churn with disgust. I laughed to myself, thinking back to my own sham of a wedding day that was atypical due to the circumstances of me and Cyan's forced engagement. We got married at City Hall with Cyan's father, Alistair, and my parents as our witnesses. The thought of that day makes me laugh to myself as I feel the hot sting of tears brimming in my eyes. Cyan has showed up the day of our wedding in rumpled streetwear, bloodshot eyes from smoking bowls, drowning his misery in bottles of whiskey, an all-nighter playing COD, and acting as if he was about to be strapped down and given the lethal injection. The pitiful City Hall wedding ceremony was just the tip of the iceberg of that horrific, unforgettable day. My wedding night was a night Cyan made sure I'd remember. That night, I'd awaken with a start by inaudible sounds and loud rap music drifting in from one of the guest bedrooms down the hall from the master suite. I felt fear and confusion at first because I could have sworn I was alone in our new townhome. For a short-lived moment, my young, naive mind was filled with hope that Cyan had come home to be with me on our wedding night. But boy, was I in for a surprise. I waltzed in on him having a threesome with two random women I'd never seen in my life. Cyan had started committing acts of infidelity before the ink had even dried on our marriage license. The cherry on top of the threesome sundae was that he found me later that night to inform me that it had never crossed his mind to even make me his wife. So, we're going to have an open marriage. Not only does Cyan encourage me to fuck around with other men during our marriage, but didn't even have the decency or respect for me to even screw other women away from the home that we shared together. I spent the remainder of our wedding night playing my harp to ignore the crass sounds of my husband fucking other women. That would also be the first night of many I learned to seek solace in my heart as my husband enjoyed our open marriage under the same roof as me. As a young girl, you envision your wedding day as the happiest day of your life because you'll be with the man of your dreams for the rest of yours. Unfortunately for me, it was the day I realized that I had spent years seeing Cy as the man of my dreams, but I wasn't the woman of his. Apparently, not even the wet ones. I'm pulled out of my thoughts of the past when I feel the cold breeze of the Philadelphia night hit me as Cyan practically rips the back door off the hinges of the Range Rover limousine. I swallow hard, averting my gaze from how handsome Cyan looks in his black tuxedo with the forest green tie that matches my bridesmaid gown. Cyan slides into the spacious backseat, ignoring my existence like he had the majority of our decade-long marriage. Anger still wafts off him in vibrations, making the air in the back of the SUV feel suffocating as the driver pulls away from the wedding venue. I had spent most of Cyan's little sister's wedding being shunned by bitchy, meddlesome mob wives, sisters, daughters, you name it. It had been over 10 years since the sex tape scandal, and I am still being ostracized, gossiped about, and insulted by many in our circle. Tonight, my solitude gave me front row seats to the debacle that unfolded with the youngest Walsh, Alana, in the center of the drama. I shake my head to myself, looking out my window watching the Philly cityscape pass by before my eyes. Alana was lucky and she didn't even know it. Instead, she was choosing to act like an immature little brat because she'd been forced to marry Athan Kostas, the Greek mafia boss, to form the alliance between our two families. I couldn't help but feel envious during their ceremony when Athan lifted her veil, revealing the beauty of the gorgeous rose, and his face filled with awe and reverence. At that moment, Alana's young, immature mind couldn't even fathom that in that one look, she had one of the most powerful men in the country by the balls. In that one enamored gaze of adoration, he had promised her the world and possibly even his heart, something that so many women wanted, but not all women were lucky to get, especially in the mafia world. Even after 10 years of a loveless marriage, I still had felt a pang in my chest while watching Cyan blatantly flirt and dance with every woman at the reception, except for me. The only person willing to dance with me was Sleet Devlin. I'm pretty sure he only danced with me at the wedding out of pity, though. While on my quest to numb my pain with alcohol, I'd overheard him and Cyan bantering over who would be able to bed the sexy Lotus Kostas, Athan's little sister, because clearly they both had a death wish. Devlin had reminded him that Lotus seemed like the woman he married, not just used for a hookup, while reminding Cyan that he was already locked down by a woman. And to that, Cyan had responded, "Yeah, by a slutty bitch no one likes, not even me." Over the years, I had gone from the Irish golden beauty to the Irish mafia whore to the Irish ice queen. But the insulting words of my former best friend and my now husband caught me off guard, cutting me deep, too deep. His words making my soul bleed so bad that Devlin caught the defeat in my eyes before I could school my expression into the bitchy glare that had gotten me my last nickname. Unbeknownst to Devlin, he had become the highlight of my night, hell, my week, when he spun me around on the dance floor until Alana, being the shit steerer she is, had sealed one of the Irish made men's death certificate with a kiss. Hence why we had to leave the wedding celebration early. All the Walsh men were on edge about how the godfather of the night would dole out punishment to the youngest Walsh. I wrapped my arms around my waist, sinking more into the backseat, feeling small, disgusted, and like a fucking nobody I'd grown accustomed to as Mrs. Cyan Walsh. Athan, a complete and utter stranger to me, lashed out his anger towards me as he berated Alana in the hallway. I feel uncontrollable giggles erupt from me, causing me to shake as I think about how I waited for Cyan to defend my honor, like I do every time someone makes a snide comment about me being a whore. But, of course, he acts unbothered. God, when will I stop being a fucking idiot when it comes to Cy? You think this shit is funny? God knows what the lethal lunatic has in store for Alana. You're over there laughing your ass off, Cy yells at me. I examine my perfectly manicured nails, allowing me time for my icy facade to slip into place as a shield. I turn with a bored expression toward my husband and respond, "She did it to herself. Plus, she'll be fine. He's a made man. He's not going to let other men have Alana. She's a beautiful young virgin that all men want to possess. Athan is a man with a huge ass ego and won't let anyone have her. So don't get your panties all in a wad." My cold, hard gaze clashes with the fire ablaze in Cyan's aquamarine eyes. Still riled up with his anger, his eyes slide from my face, scanning over my body in the form-fitting bridesmaid gown. It has a plunging neckline that shows off the round mounds of my full C-cup breast, before cinching me in at the waist and flaring out at the hips. The dress shows off a generous amount of my toned thigh because of the almost indecently high slit. I feel my skin break out in goosebumps at every spot that my husband's gaze lingers. When Cyan's eyes peer back at my face, my breath catches in my throat because my eyes might be playing tricks on me. His eyes are a smoldering, cloudy, dark bluish green of lust. His gaze follows my tongue as it darts out to lick my lips that feel suddenly dry. No matter how much Cyan hates me, there are always moments where we're in a tight, confined space that his eyes show me he's still as sexually attracted to me as he has been since he talked me out my panties in high school. Thinking of panties, I feel mine become wet with my sexual want as his gaze lingers on my mouth. Hoover my dick like that throat goat so many men claim you to be. Cyan lashes out, unbuckling his pants to reveal his thick, hard, erect dick. He squeezes the shaft, making my mouth water for a taste as I watch pre-cum slowly drip from the tip of its dickhead. I should say no. I should demand him to respect me. But when I peel my eyes away from his erection and stare into his eyes, I see my best friend Cy that I'll always foolishly love. Also, maybe this moment will make him not choose other women over me, like the times earlier in our marriage I begged him not to sleep with other women because he was the only man I wanted. I unbuckle my seatbelt, scooting across the leather seats, closing the gap between us. I smack his hand away from his dick to replace them with mine. I begin rubbing my hand over his rigid shaft, changing up pressure and strokes until I hear his breath become shallow. I lower my head to take the tip between my lips, but before I do, I peer into Sai's unguarded face, quietly whispering, "I don't like when you say shit like that to me." I don't wait for a response before I suck his dick to the back of my throat. I move my head slowly up and down while I run my tongue slowly over the protruding veins of his shaft. I swirl my tongue around the tip until he's convulsing, using my hands to stroke his shaft until he's sucking in deep breaths of pleasure. I play with his balls while I get his dick slobbery, wet with my spit as I run my tongue teasingly over every part. I place my mouth back on his manhood, swallowing him to the back of my throat. I change the tempo by moving between deep, fast motions to slow, shallow thrust of my mouth with my tongue dragging across every ridge before sucking and running my tongue around the tip. I suck Cyan's soul out of his dick as he loses patience and begins to thrust into my mouth, barreling toward his orgasm. Cyan yanks my head away from his dick, painting my face with hot ropes of semen as he grunts out his sexual release. The car comes to a stop. Cyan shifts away from me and murmurs to himself, "Perfect timing." He tucks his dick back into his tuxedo pants, making sure he's decent before opening the back door, which sends a chill up my spine. I sit there with his cum dripping down my face onto my designer bridesmaid gown. He turns to face me with a smug look on his face and says, "If you didn't want people to talk about your abilities in the bedroom, then you should have taken that into consideration before you released a video showcasing the dick-sucking skills I taught you. You should be proud about the fact that I made you a well-known throat goat, because you at least have that going for you in your pathetic existence. Now, clean yourself up." Calm doesn't really mix well with makeup. It's not a good look. Cyan leaps out the back seat without a backwards glance before I can make a retort. The black glove hand of Cyan's driver reaches through the open door with a crisp white handkerchief. I snatch it from his hand, mumbling thank you as I wipe Cyan's cum off my face. I'm so humiliated. I slide out the back seat of the limo, clutching the cum-covered handkerchief in my hand, unable to make eye contact with his driver. As I walk up the steps to the front door of our home, I begin to wonder if maybe I should stop expecting things to ever get better between Cyan and me. After all, I understand more and more each day of my marriage to Cyan, how his father drove his mother to jump to her death. I toss back my third mimosa in an attempt to survive the weekly Sunday Fundays that Britty hosts every week at her and Alistair's beautiful home. I stretch out on the lounge chair by the pool, pretending to enjoy the scorching hot sun beaming down on my fair skin. As a natural blonde, the sun wasn't my friend because I easily burned. But I couldn't refuse an invitation from the mafia boss's wife, especially since my circle was already non-existent. Britty and I were the same age, and we never liked each other. She was one of the fakest, sweet, docile, and submissive women I've ever met in my life. But I couldn't deny that her personality and classic beauty made her ooze the persona of the perfect mob wife. I watched her slather sunscreen on her 5-year-old daughter, feeling the slightest bit of envy creep into my stomach. I hadn't given much thought to motherhood, but anytime I saw my niece and nephew, I'd feel a tinge of jealousy over Keelan and Brittany's motherhood statuses. I know you and Cyan got married young, but when are you two planning on having children? Keelan questions after catching me looking longingly at Brittany's interactions with her little girl. Keelan is one of the sweetest girls I've ever met. And although she was 4 years younger than me, I felt like outside of Devlin, she hadn't ever treated me like a leper the way everyone else in the Irish mafia, including my husband, had. I tried to find the words in my head to best answer Keelan's question. She wouldn't understand a tumultuous, loveless marriage like mine and Zai. Keelan, although she fought it at first, was one of the lucky girls that got to marry a decent man. Anytime I saw Blaine, Keelan, and their son together, my heart wept for the picture-perfect family I always envisioned for me and Cyan. Oh, you know Cyan. He's really immersed into his forever bachelor status, and he wouldn't want a wrench to be thrown into that lifestyle. I laugh, covering my eyes with my black aviator Gucci shades to mask the hurt lurking behind the lie of false aloofness to the situation. I laughed bitterly to myself, thinking about how I'd had more sex with Cyan as a teenager than in the 10 years of our marriage. Cyan only begrudgingly came to our marital bed for me to fulfill my wifely duties when he didn't have the want to take the time to coax another woman into his bed. Anytime we've had sex as a married couple, it'd only been for him to use my body to get his rocks off, leaving me feeling cold and emotionally disconnected from the man I once called my best friend. Maybe he's hesitant to have children because that video is out there of you two being intimate with one another. Maybe he's afraid they'll see it, or he doesn't want your kids to hear all the talk about you. Britty hypothesized, butting into our conversation. Thank God for my designer sunglasses that hit the huge eye roll I gave Britty. Lucky for her, she was heavily pregnant, Otherwise, she may have accidentally found herself splashing around in the pool with the kids. I swear, any opportunity Brittany found, she'd bring up my tarnished reputation and that stupid fucking sex tape. Brittany had always been jealous of me for being the Irish's golden beauty, and she was never good about hiding her envy toward me. I weighed the options in my head if I gave a shit about an explosive argument between Cy and I, if I hurt his brother's wife's feelings or not. But before I could give my best bitchiest retort, sweet Keelan, the forever peacekeeper, responded in my defense. I mean, you guys were as thick as thieves growing up. Everyone wanted a friendship like you and Science. It was infallible. I was younger, but I always knew you guys were soulmates. You have matching tattoos and share a birthday, for heaven's sake. I think it may be worth the conversation if you haven't had it in a while. People in relationships change when you have kids. Brittany flushes with embarrassment from Keelan's words of encouragement to me. I give Keelan a broad smile after mouthing the word thanks to her, which she returns with a squeeze of my forearm and a sly wink. I found myself deep in thought about our conversation, subconsciously rubbing the gray to black ombre semicolon tattoo behind my right ear. Our matching tattoos had been something we had done together as teens because Cyan had taken his mother's death so hard. These semicolon tattoos with a heart in place of the dot with a C outlined in the center of mine and a B in the center of his were a reminder that no matter how terrible life in the mafia became for us, we'd always keep going. Unfortunately, these past 10 years, I've touched mine every day to remember to keep going and not to jump to my death. But maybe Keelan was onto something about me having a baby. If I had a baby, it'd be someone to actually love me, want me, and see me as the most important person to them. Things I've desperately wanted in life, but had yet to receive. I just needed to figure out a way to initiate sex with Cyan so I could have a baby to ease my loneliness in this godforsaken, loveless marriage. I had spent a few weeks trying to devise the perfect seduction plan to get Cyan to fuck me. In the past, I had begged, screamed, and even barred him from my bed in an attempt to keep him from sleeping with other women. But it had always been to no avail. It hurt more than anything to know that he was the only man I had ever wanted in my bed, but he willingly slept with anyone with a vagina. How could he still be so angry about something that happened over a decade ago? It's hard to imagine someone holding a grudge for that long. It had to be something or someone keeping him from our bed every single night. So, Operation Get Cyan into bed would have to revolve around him feeling like he was fucking someone else. It's not like I had any more self-respect or dignity to lose anyway when it came to Cyan Walsh. I finished securing the combs of the dark brown wig to my head. The long brown wig fell in beautiful loose beach waves around my shoulders. I touched up the bright red lipstick that covered my pout. I looked like a fucking knockout as I gave myself a once over in the mirror. Not even Cyan would be able to say no to me once his eyes feasted upon me in my royal blue, Agent Provocateur naughty lingerie set. I slid my feet into my silver Giuseppe Zanotti strappy Harmony heels. I walked down the hallway, ignoring the feeling of Simone Biles doing somersaults in my stomach as I approached Cyan's bedroom door. I feel cold sweat drip down between my lace-encased breasts that are pushed up to my chin by the corset that leaves very little to the imagination. I push the door open to Cyan's bedroom, using the adrenaline rushing through my body as a second wave of much-needed confidence to conquer my fear of possible sexual rejection. As I step into the bedroom, I am greeted by the delicious sight of Cyan in nothing but a fluffy white bath towel fresh out of the shower. His thick, reddish-brown hair falls onto his forehead in a mess of damp waves, adding to his sex appeal. My mouth salivates at the sight of his broad, muscular chest that tapers into his thin waist and six-pack abs. My eyes follow the trail of his curls that hid his manhood behind the white towel slung low on his hips. Damn, Bevan. I don't know what to say. I'm actually about to leave. What's with the hair? Cyan asks, trying to keep his lust-filled gaze on my face and not on my body clawed in sexy, fuck-me lingerie. I had chosen a brown wig because every time I had the unpleasant fortune of meeting one of his bedmates, they were frequently brunette. In the 10 years of our marriage, I'd never seen a blonde saunter out of our home. Maybe I caused him to have an aversion to blonde women. Who knows? Ignoring his statement, I walk to stand in front of him and sink to my knees on the plush bedroom rug. I rip his towel from around his waist, which makes me eye level with his growing, hard, thick erection. A bead of pre-cum drips from the deep red tip of his dick. I dart my tongue out to lick at the sticky tartness of him before teasing him by licking slow, sloppy circles around the head of his manhood until I feel his hips flex. Cyan lets out a low, throaty groan as I inhale him to the back of my throat. He places his hand to the back of my head as I hollow my cheeks and begin to deep throat his cock. I lick, tease, stroke, and hum around his dick until I begin to feel his balls draw up and hit me in the chin. I know he's about to come, so I tug away from him, making him let out a low hiss of frustration. I stand up, pushing him against his chest until his knees hit the end of the bed, and he has no choice but to fall down on his back. Bevan, I don't think this is a good idea. Cyan whispers, subconsciously stroking his angry erection. I pull the sopping wet piece of lace from between my thighs to eliminate any barrier between my hot, wet pussy and Cyan's dick. I straddle Cyan's big muscular thighs, hovering slightly above his weeping cock, my arousal coating my inner thighs as my core clenches around emptiness and desperate need to be satiated and feel full. I peer down into Cyan's eyes that are darkened with desire and anxiously plead. Please, Cyan, fuck me. I want you desperately. If it helps you, then pretend I'm someone else. Pretend I'm someone you don't hate. I nibble on my plump lip, teasing his cock by running the tip of it through my slippery, wet pussy folds, coating him with my desire for him. I feel his body wince from the words of my plea as he grabs my hips, slamming me down onto his big, thick erection. I let out a yelp from the pain of the stretch as Cyan pounds into my hot, wet pussy. I meet the harsh rhythm Cyan has set with his fucking as I grind down on his pelvis so my throbbing clitoris gets some love and attention. We don't give each other eye contact as we greedily take from each other's body while racing towards the finish line of sexual ecstasy. I shout out in a loud moan as I reach orgasm, and Cyan's growl of sexual bliss follows shortly after. I lift my head, wiping sweat from my brows. I peer down into Cyan's unguarded face. I hold back the tears as I witness the many emotions and words that have gone unsaid flitter across my husband and best friend's face. I press a hard kiss to his soft lips before getting off of him and heading back towards my bedroom. If you had asked me 11 years ago if I'd ever dreamt in a million years that the only way to get the horny man I knew that couldn't get enough of my body to fuck me would be to introduce role play into the bedroom by dressing up as someone else and begging Cyan to fuck me, I would have laughed at the insanity of that question. Once I made it back to my bedroom, I let the burning hot tears of humiliation flow freely from my eyes as the realization set in that Cyan would indeed fuck just about anyone as long as that someone wasn't me. Since that night, I donned a brown wig and pranced into Cyan's bedroom in the scantiest of lingerie. He'd been showing more sexual interest in me. Over the past couple of months, our sex life had went from non-existent to him being unable to keep his hands off me. We had begun to get really creative in the bedroom with our role playing. He'd shoot me a text with a theme and I'd dress up as it, and we'd been having more and better sex than I had ever imagined. But Cyan was spending more time with me, not only in the bedroom, but also out in public. He'd been inviting me out to dinner and as his escort to public functions, rather than choosing to fly solo like he usually did. That way, he could meet in bed nameless women. Cyan's efforts in our relationship had been making me feel elated and less depressed about my situation, since it seemed like our marriage had taken a turn for the better. I'd been allowing hope to bloom in my heart that our relationship could be a happy and loving one. Cyan's current behavior made me feel more excited about bringing children into our marriage, no longer as a thought to make me feel less lonely and loved for the first time in my pathetic life. I sat beside Cyan at the dinner table in Alistair's formal dining room for one of Alistair's monthly family dinners I typically dreaded. I squeeze Cyan's hand with a smile as Alana enters the dining room with her husband's brother Draco. Even with her raven black and purple tinted hair, the young woman was breathtakingly beautiful. Finally, now that everyone was here, we could finally get dinner underway. The quicker dinner in it, the quicker I could have Cy all to myself for the rest of the night. I had something extremely sexy and exciting planned for us. I shiver at the feeling of Cyan's hot breath close to my ear. I wait in anticipation for him to nibble my bottom earlobe or press a hot, passionate kiss to my neck. But neither of those acts of intimacy happen. Instead, he whispers in my ear, "Bevan, I think it'd be the best for the both of us if you disappeared. I think we've been married long enough and my father's been dead for a while that if you ran off, no one would care or notice. Of course, I'd give you money to start your new life. You could think of this as an adventure." My breath catches in my throat at his request. Nervous laughter bubbles from my throat because I'm pretty sure I heard Cyan wrong. Did he really just ask me to disappear? I turn my head to study his expression and witness a humorless expression. In fact, I've never seen Cyan look so serious in his life. My heart feels like someone has literally reached their hand into my chest and is twisting and squeezing it until it eventually and torturously will give out. Clearly noticing that the expression on my face has morphed into one of confusion, Cyan continues to torture my heart with harsher words. I've fallen in love with someone, Bevan, and she's pregnant. If you disappear and leave Philly, then I can be more open with the woman I've loved for a long time and who carries my heir. I see fucking red. How could he do this to me? How could he be so fucking reckless and get someone else pregnant while married to me? If that wasn't the biggest fuck you in good riddance, then I didn't know what could possibly be worse than finding out the man I loved was having a baby with someone else. For the first time in many years, I give in to my poor impulse and toss my glass of wine in his face. I stand up from the table roaring, "How fucking could you? Bevan, Jesus, can we have one night without your theatrics and tantrums?" Blaine asks, gently placing a hand on my arm. I give Blaine an incredulous look because, of course, I am always the issue in every situation that Cyan is involved. I can't wrap my head around the grenade Cyan threw into our marriage to detonate our relationship. I rush from the dining room with tears burning my eyes, feeling distraught about the situation, heading towards the nearest restroom to gain my composure. My skin begins to feel prickly, like 1,000 tiny needles have been stuck into every inch of my body. I feel lightheaded and my skin feels aflame. The room begins to spin as I gasp for a breath. I feel like I'm trying to get my head above ground, but Cyan continues shoveling dirt down my throat, making it impossible for me to breathe. My anxiety begins to overtake me as the hyperventilation and chest palpitations begin to happen simultaneously. I stagger to the bottom step of the staircase to sit as I stare at the orange pianist painting, trying to get my panic attack under control. I stare at the orange pianist until the rustic, burnt, neon orange hues swirl together, causing me to have double vision and see black spots. My breathing starts to slow, but the tears come harder and faster as I begin to ugly cry. Cyan had been being nice to me these past few months, trying to find a way to break his news to me and make his request. I felt disgusted with myself, feeling as if 1,000 showers were warranted for all the pity sex Cy had forced himself to have with me. Or maybe with his willingness to roleplay with me, I had just become the ass of one of his many jokes. Before I can get more lost in my thoughts, the front door is kicked down as gunshots ring out. Fuck. I get to my feet and turn to run, but I'm frozen in place as my eyes shift from Oleg Levin to his enforcer they call the Silencer. The Silencer has his revolver pointed right at my head, and for a moment I close my eyes, praying that he end my misery once and for all. Instead, I feel the ground shift from beneath my feet, opening my eyes to realize I've been thrown over a big, broad shoulder. The cold air of the Philadelphia night cools my heated flesh as I'm thrown into a black SUV. A shudder of horror runs down my spine, turning my blood to ice once the SUV begins to pull away from Alistair's mansion. Fuck! I have been captured by the Russian Bratva. Just when I thought my night couldn't get any worse, my eyes clash with the cold, soulless, ice blue eyes of the silencer, my captor. I close my eyes, slowing my breathing and trying to get a handle on my emotions. Please, take anyone but me. I promise you. Zion and his brothers won't give a fuck that I've gone missing. I don't even know anything about the Irish Mafia to even be a help for you. You could have taken anyone else and they'd be more beneficial to your cause. I'm just the whore of the Irish Mafia. Trust me when I tell you, Zion won't jeopardize himself, his brothers, or even the lowest of his soldiers to rescue me from the Bratva. I beg, but I'm met with silence and callous ice blue eyes filled with aloofness. I flinch when my captor leans forward, pushing my head towards his black gloved hand, a white handkerchief smothering my face with a pleasant, sweet, delicious scent that causes my eyes to become heavy. Shit, he chloroformed me. As my head starts to swim, all I can think is that it cost Zion nothing to get his wish. My heart becomes heavy as I think about how I laid down my life for Zion, my husband, my best friend. But he wouldn't do the same. The next thing I know, I sink into a dark abyss. So, it seems like Bevan isn't the villain that Alana paints her out to be in Dazzled by the Devil. What do you think will happen to Bevan now that she's at the hands of the Russian Bratva with no white knight in sight? Do you think she'll find a way to be her own hero again? Let me know in my DMs on Instagram at Lala's Bedtime Tales. If you can't wait until next week for part 2, then join the exclusive Patreon community for early access. Also, if you enjoyed the latest story, then listen to Dazzled by the Devil, A Deep Love of Domination, and Welcome to the House of Kink to learn more and hear different viewpoints of some of the characters mentioned in this episode. Ta-ta for now. Until next time. Oh, so hot and sexy bedtime stories from Lala's Bedtime Tales. Thanks for tuning in to this week's erotic tale. For more erotic stories, sex tips, love advice, and sexual education, check out lalasbedtimetales.com and add me on Instagram for more erotic and sensual content at Lala's Bedtime Tales. Please comment and share your fave sexy bedtime stories with erotica enthusiasts like you and me. Ta-ta until next time, sexies.